Welcome to the Anesthesiology Journal podcast, an audio interview of study authors and editorialists.
Hello, I'm Bobbi Jean Schweitzer, professor of anesthesiology at Northwestern University and an associate editor for Anesthesiology. And you are listening to an anesthesiology podcast designed for physicians and scientists interested in the research that appears in our journal. Today we are speaking with two authors of publications that appear in the March 2019 issue of the journal. With us is Dr. Tim Rommel. Dr. Rommel is the lead author of an article titled Aquaporin 5-1364 AC Promoter Polymorphism is associated with pulmonary inflammation and survival in acute respiratory distress syndrome. He is a professor in the Department of Anesthesia, Intensive Care Medicine, and Pain Therapy, University Hospital, Knapp-Trapp Krankenhaus in Bochum, Germany. Welcome, Dr. Rommel.
Hello, Dr. Schweitzer, and thanks for having me.
And joining Dr. Rommel is Dr. Wolfgang M. Kubler, who wrote an accompanying editorial, Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, Biomarkers, Mechanisms, and Water Channels. Dr. Kubler is from the Institute of Physiology, Chairwright Universität Mitzen in Berlin, Germany, and Keenan Research Center for Biomedical Science, St. Michael's Hospital and Departments of Physiology and Surgery, University of Toronto, with the latter two both in Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Dr. Kubler.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
So let's start with you, Dr. Rommel. What were the primary and secondary goals of your study?
The primary goal of the study was to assess the impact of Aquaporin 5-1364 A2C single nucleotide polymorphism on pulmonary inflammation in patients suffering from RDS. As secondary goal, we tested the hypothesis that the polymorphism is also associated with 30-day survival.
So maybe we should start with your telling us more about Aquaporin 5 and especially how it relates to ARDS. I'm going to confess that I had not heard of this before I read your paper.
Yes, of course. Aquaporin 5 is a water channel and belongs to a larger family of small integral membrane proteins. Aquaporin 5 forms pores in the cell membrane, mainly facilitating the water transport of the cell. So the question is, of course, where is the link to the immune system? Interestingly, beneath the ability of Aquaporin 5 to regulate the transport of water across membranes, Aquaporin 5 also impacts on the key mechanisms of inflammation, including immune cell migration. Therefore, Aquaporin 5 could also be a key player for pulmonary inflammation in RDS. Accordingly, we tested the hypothesis that a special gene variant of the Aquaporin 5 promoter region in patients with RDS is associated with first the pulmonary inflammation, as demonstrated by bronchoalveolar lavage characteristics, and second, 30-day survival.
So what gene variant were you looking for in this study?
The cumbersome name is Aquaporin 5-1364 A2C promoter single nucleotide polymorphism. On sequencing the Aquaporin 5 promoter region among healthy patients, we previously described this functional, important, and common polymorphism in the Aquaporin 5 gene promoter. Substitution of cytosine for adenine at the position 1364 in the promoter region was associated with a reduced transcriptional activation of the Aquaporin 5 gene. Therefore, we find lower mRNA and protein expression in the C allele carriers of the Aquaporin 5 promoter polymorphism.
I think you said it was common. How common is this?
These polymorphisms are in about, in a representative population, two-thirds for the normal AA genotype, and one-third in the aberrant cytosine allele is found. The largest amount is in the heterozygous AC allele carriers, and just a small amount of about 5% is found in the homozygous CC allele carriers.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about that gene a little later in this discussion. But first, let's talk about your study participants and the setting for this study. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, of course. All patients for the study were admitted to our intensive care unit in the years from 2009 and 2013 and considered eligible if they fulfilled the formal criteria of an RDS. Most patients that were included in the study were referred from other intensive care units for possible ECMO therapy to our center after a rapidly progressive RDS course. In total, 136 patients with RDS were included in our study.
So, Dr. Kubler, can you perhaps give us a primer on ARDS? I think, obviously, even the non-intensivists listening to this are familiar with this term, but I'm not sure that I'm even up to date on the latest information. Specifically, what are the criteria to establish a diagnosis of ARDS?
So the diagnostic criteria were initially introduced by Ashbow in his first description in the 1967 of ARDS, and then were updated, I think, in the late 80s or late early 90s. But right now we actually use the diagnostic criteria that have been updated in 2012 by the so-called Berlin definition. And those comprise sudden onset, which basically means within 1 week of a known clinical insult that can be associated to the development of ARDS, then the presence of bilateral opacities on chest imaging, usually X-ray, then the fact that the lung edema cannot be fully explained by cardiac failure or fluid overload, so there may be some degree of cardiac failure, but it does not suffice to fully explain the extent of lung edema that is evident, and finally, reduced oxygenation. And based on the degree of this oxygenation deficit, you can further subclassify ARDS in mild, moderate, or severe.
Thank you. So, Dr. Rommel, ARDS can result from both direct insults to the lungs as well as indirect causes. What were the inciting causes of ARDS in your patients, and did you include all etiologies?
So RDS was evoked in 110 cases, so 81% of the entire cohort directly by a bacterial pneumonia, and in 26 cases, 90% of the cohort by a primary extrapulmonary sepsis with a secondary bacterial pneumonia leading to RDS.
So Dr. Kubler, is there a difference in ARDS outcomes and responses to therapy based on underlying causes of this condition?
That is an interesting question. There are a series of studies which suggest that outcomes and therapeutic effectiveness may vary depending on the cause of ARDS. For example, patients with direct lung injury, ARDS, so with an insult which primarily affects the lungs, have a higher mortality than those with indirect ARDS, so patients where ARDS develop subsequent to a systemic inflammatory disease such as pancreatitis or sepsis or transfusion. Studies from the late 90s and early 2000s even suggest that patients with direct versus indirect ARDS respond differently to, for example, ventilator maneuvers such as high PEEP or prone positioning or size. And also the effectiveness of such measures seems to depend on the severity of the disease. So there is quite a different response depending on the initial trigger of the disease as well as the course of the disease. More recently, Carolyn Kelphy introduced the concept of subphenotyping patients by clinical parameters into two phenotypes. One was hyperinflammatory and one was hypoinflammatory. The hyperinflammatory phenotype is more frequently associated with sepsis and has a worse outcome, but in contrast to this hypoinflammatory phenotype, seems to respond better to, for example, high PEEP ventilation or treatment with statins. So again, there are differences not only in terms of outcome, but also in therapeutic response.
Sounds like quite a broad spectrum that's all, caught under one simple term?
That, I think, is a very big problem in the whole ARDS field. We're really talking about a syndrome here and not a specific disease. And we lump a lot of different conditions which share a common pathology and maybe a common pathway under this big umbrella. But whether we can target it with one single approach or whether we have to substratify it, depending on the cause of the disease or the patient or the profile, how the disease develops, is really not unclear. It has divided the field really in the lumpers and the splitters. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? How do you want to approach it?
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Rommel, how did you actually determine these genotypes? Was this just a simple blood test? And also, how did you measure pulmonary inflammation? Was it biopsies or some other mechanism?
To your first question, how we determined the genotypes, therefore DNA was extracted from whole blood, and for genotyping, a polymerase chain reaction was performed, followed by pyrosequencing. In this context, pyrosequencing is a well-known method of DNA sequencing or determining the order of nucleotides in the DNA, respectively, based on the principle sequencing by synthesis. The template DNA is immobile, and solutions of the four different nucleotides are sequentially added and removed from the reaction. When the nucleotide solution complements to the first unpaired base of the template, a detectable light is produced based on a reaction when pyrophosphate is released. Hence, the sequence of the solutions that produce a signal allows the determination of the sequence of the template. To your second question, how we did measure pulmonary inflammation. In the bronchoalveolar vase of every patient, total protein concentrations, albumin concentrations, lactate dehydrogenase activity, and white cell concentrations were measured as surrogates for pulmonary inflammation. In addition, three different cytokines, in detail TNF-alpha, interleukin-6, and 10 were measured in BIL of and serum.
Sounds like a lot of science.
Yeah.
Before we get to the results from your study, can you tell us a bit about what other studies have shown us about the polymorphisms of aquaporin 5?
Yes, of course. We know that the 1364A2C single nucleotide polymorphism in the promoter region of aquaporin 5 is associated with an altered aquaporin 5 expression and also impacts on 30-day survival and sepsis. Due to the role of aquaporin 5 mediating key mechanisms of inflammation and immune cell migration, we suspected the single nucleotide polymorphism to affect key mechanisms of pulmonary inflammation and immune cell migration also in ARDS. And also, this may contribute to an altered mortality risk among the genotypes.
So, Dr. Kubler, do we know anything about other genotypes or specific variant alleles and outcomes in patients with ARDS?
Yes, there are a series of genetic studies. Actually, some of them are also from the group of Dr. Rommel and Dr. Adamczyk in Bochum, but also from others, who have shown associations between individual genotypes and outcome in ARDS patients. For example, different alleles of the platelet activating factor acetyl hydrolase that are associated with ARDS survival. And this acetyl hydrolase inactivates platelet activating factor, which is an inflammatory mediator and one of the key mediators in ARDS. So pathophysiologically, this association somehow makes sense. Also, there are associations of polymorphisms in genes, for example, encoding for angiotensin-converting enzyme that are associated with risk for and outcome of ARDS. And the same has been shown for quite a variety of genetic polymorphisms in various genes that are related to inflammation or vascular responses, such as interleukin-8 or hypoxia-inducible factor 1-alpha or vascular endothelial growth factors. And that, of course, that's then fueled the interest in early detection of such genetic polymorphisms for guided therapy in ARDS patients.
So now that we have some background, Dr. Rommel, can you share with our listeners what you found with your study? And I guess let's first start with the DNA testing.
Regarding distribution of the genetic variations of the aquaporin 5 polymorphism, we observed a frequency of 68% for the AA genotypes and 32% for AC and CC genotypes, in line with the expected distribution.
And what about the lung lavage results?
In bronchoalveolar lavage, total protein concentrations and albumin concentrations were 2.4-fold lower, lactate dehydrogenase activity 2.8-fold lower, and leukocyte concentrations 3.4-fold lower in CLL carriers compared to the normal AA genotype patients. Furthermore, neutrophil count and interleukin 6 concentrations were also lower in CLL carriers, hence our results are compatible with an attenuated pulmonary inflammation in AC and CC genotypes.
So if I can summarize, it was better to have the variant gene than the more common gene.
In our cohort regarding survival, it was an advantage to be a AC or CC genotype, yes.
Was there a difference between the AC and CC, or do you have enough numbers to look at that, or you just grouped them together versus the AA?
Thank you for this important question regarding, I think, a gene dose effect. Are there differences between these both subgroups, CC, homozygous CC, and AC genotypes? However, our data just allows us to speculate on a gene dose effect or a difference between the AC and CC genotypes due to lower means of value in both groups. However, there's no statistical difference between the AC and CC genotypes because of the rare occurrence of the CC genotypes. We have only 5 patients with the CC genotype. Hence, definite conclusions regarding a strict gene dose effect cannot be drawn with our data.
Is there anything about these patients with these gene variants, if they don't have ARDS, that are different in either lung function or any other way?
They don't have different characteristics without ARDS. So we just find different mortality rates when patients suffering from ARDS or sepsis. And we have several things that we thought this could be. For example, aquaporin 5 was addressed to alter the lung fluid concentrations or effect on pulmonary edema. And due to other studies we have performed, we know, get insight that it's more the effects on the immune system. But without an hyperinflammation, we don't get these genotypes clinically differed.
Interesting. So Dr. Kubler, were you surprised by the results of Dr. Rommel's study, and why or why not?
Yes and no. So initially, when aquaporins were discovered in the 1990s, they attracted early interest from the ARDS community because it was believed that their function as water channels could play an important role in lung edema formation. But when people did the experiments with corresponding knockout animals, they didn't find differences in cardiogenic edema formation and also in edema resolution. And so at that stage, it was thought that the case for aquaporins in ARDS was pretty much closed. But a few years later now, the team of Dr. Adamczyk in Bochum identified a predictive role of the aquaporin 5 1364 A2C polymorphism in sepsis and was able to link it to the role of aquaporin 5 in immune cell migration. And this, of course, then brought aquaporins back on the map in the context of systemic inflammatory disease. And then the next step was to go back to ARDS, and that's what Dr. Rommel very elegantly did. And so somewhat this is now a logical extension of this work.
Dr. Rama, in your paper, I think you write about the discrepant findings of aquaporin 5 variants in different studies. Can you expand? I think maybe that's what Dr. Kubler was telling us a bit about, but can you expand on these findings, diverse findings for us?
Yes, of course. Other studies, especially the study of Zhang and colleagues, reported that a greater aquaporin 5 expression is may protective in the maintenance of the pulmonary barrier function and in also in acute lung injury. However, we found more or less the opposite. We found an aggravated pulmonary inflammation in association with the AA genotypes that are related to a higher aquaporin 5 expression. Strikingly, Zhang and colleagues also showed that the aquaporin 5 deficiency is associated with a declined activation of inflammatory pathways like NF-kappa-B, which is therefore in line with our results.
Are there reasonable explanations and/or mechanisms that explain these divergent outcomes?
Taking all these results into account, in addition to what Dr. Kubler said, the aquaporin 5 promoter polymorphism and also the aquaporin 5 expression in RDS might represent a double-edged sword, so you can say this. On the one hand, the AA genotype aggravates the immune cell migration to the infected tissues, which is associated with a better bacterial eradication and less bacterially evoked harm. On the other hand, situations with an exaggerated immune system and therefore an hyperactive immune system, cell migration is also aggravated in the AA genotypes that may evoke greater release of proteases, reactive oxygen species that potentially damages the host tissue. And the latter hypothesis is in line with our results demonstrating lower protein and albumin concentration as markers for pulmonary inflammation, as well as lower lactate dehydrogenase activity, a marker for pulmonary damage in our bronchoalveolar lavage characteristic in the AC and CC genotypes.
So, Dr. Kubler, is there an evolutionary explanation or rationale as to why a mutation like this, the aquaporin 5-1364A to C, may have both positive and negative effects?
Yes, I guess so. So, evolution is in a large part driven by infection and the development of appropriate immune responses. And the AA genotype of the aquaporin 5-1364A to C promoter may originally have conferred an evolutionary advantage because of the higher expression of aquaporin 5 and therefore a higher migration of immune cells to the site of injury and infection, which helped the body to defend itself against invading pathogens. However, in our days now, where we live with antibiotics, which in some cases at least can kill the bacteria for us, where we live also with sterile modes of inflammatory signals or stimuli such as mechanical ventilation in the critical ill, this may actually turn in a disadvantage because now we still have the increased infiltration and migration of immune cells and inflammatory cells, but they don't need to fight the invading pathogens anymore, but they still kill the host tissue in the lung and cause ARDS. So while a strong inflammatory response may have had an evolutionary advantage, it may now result in a higher mortality in diseases associated with hyperinflammation such as ARDS.
Very interesting. Dr. Rommel, Dr. Kubler mentioned the renin-angiotensin system earlier, and I understand that patients, I think, taking ACE inhibitors and ARBs have a lower mortality with aspiration pneumonia. And I think in your paper, you mentioned the involvement of the renin-angiotensin system in the pathogenesis and clinical outcome of ARDS. What is the connection between the single nucleotide polymorphism and the renin-angiotensin system?
The link is that the renin-angiotensin system signaling and also is linked to inflammation and fibrosis and impaired lung function and is potentially associated with a worse outcome in RDS. In another context, our group previously described the aquaporin 5 polymorphism alters renin angiotensin system regulation in young and healthy humans, as well in patients with coronary heart disease. So this is also for RDS or sepsis a quite interesting association. However, we previously showed that the aquaporin 5 polymorphism is not associated with an altered plasma angiotensin or serum aldosterone concentration in patients experiencing a severe sepsis. Nevertheless, research on this topic may offer a better understanding of the role and interaction of renin angiotensin system and aquaporin 5 in RDS pathophysiology.
Are there any clinical trials looking at the use of ACE inhibitors or ARBs in treating patients with ARDS?
Definitely yes, but our group is at the moment not looking at this interaction. So we are focusing on immune cell migration because we have this results from patients that are suffering from sepsis. And so we are not continuing to investigate the interaction of the renin angiotensin aldosterone system on and aquaporin 5 in inflammatory diseases at the moment.
I see. So, Dr. Kubler, can we use this information we know now about this variant genotype or phenotype to actually guide therapies for individual patients with ARDS?
This is probably the holy grail of precision medicine in ARDS, but I think it's still a way to go. We have at present identified individual genetic polymorphisms for ARDS, such as the aquaporin 5 promoter alleles, but we are still far from an all-encompassing picture of the whole genetic risk of an individual patient, because so far we have not coherently synthesized the known individual polymorphisms into a global risk stratification assessment, and probably there are still more polymorphisms which predict outcome which we have not yet identified. And even if we do, we also have to consider that the genetic profile of a patient is only one piece to the puzzle when we aim for precision medicine. And we have to consider other factors such as the type and severity of injury and the individual patient response pattern, which are probably of equal relevance for the prediction of outcome and response to therapy. So I think this is clearly the goal where we want to go. But we have to take a lot of different aspects into consideration here, such as disease triggers, patient genotype, and acquired traits, if we want to achieve a reliable and comprehensive stratification.
So, Dr. Amel, how close do you think we are to using the information, such as what you've discovered about this variant genotype, in the actual clinical care of patients with ARDS? And what are the next steps?
I just totally agree with what Dr. Kubler said. And also, thank to you for this important question. There are still some steps to take. Nevertheless, the effects of aquaporins on shaping or potentially shaping the immune response could be a very interesting starting point for new therapeutic targets. Especially in the context of personalized medicine, it seems, in my opinion, appropriate to try to counteract the motility differences between the genotypes that we have described. However, we still need a better mechanistic understanding, for example, to define the right time and the right indication for such a therapy, and we need a more profoundly knowledge about the mechanisms that are linked of aquaporin 5 and immune cell migration. And further, we need to profoundly test the substances that potentially influence the aquaporin 5 expression in the context of our polymorphism and RDS. So there are several steps, but I think at the moment we can say it's a quite interesting starting point for potential new therapeutic targets.
Yes, I think like most good studies, it just kind of moves us along the spectrum towards a better understanding and knowledge, but also raises further questions and opens up more opportunities. So I hope today's discussion will interest many of our listeners and lead you to read this important article to learn more. Thank you, Drs. Rommel and Kubler, for discussing your work with us today. I wish you well as you continue your efforts to enhance the practice of anesthesiology and strive to improve the care of our patients.
You've been listening to the Anesthesiology Journal Podcast, the official peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Check anesthesiology.org for an archive of this podcast and other related content.